Hello and welcome to The Stack. On this week's show, I speak with Penny Martin from The Gentlewoman, all about her latest issue with Janelle Monáe on the cover. We also speak with Branko Birkic, founder and editor-in-chief of South African newspaper The Daily Maverick, who explains their recent move to print. And talking about newspapers, we preview our November issue with a wonderful story about three local newspapers making a difference. Enjoy the show. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Coming up on the show, we head to South Africa to talk with the founder of a South African newspaper moving to print, and Monocle's own Louis Harnett O'Mara will be previewing our November issue. But first, a regular here on The Stack, always nice speaking with Penny Martin, editor-in-chief of The Gentlewoman. Their autumn and winter issue is just out with a stunning cover featuring Janelle Monáe. Penny tells me all about it, plus she satisfies my curiosity about what is the exact color of the cover.
Of course, there were lots of frantic, anxious meetings in March and April, not just about the logistics of how we would literally make the magazine whilst we didn't know whether people would want to be photographed in real life and participate in the usual in real life conversations. The idea of Zoom was already something that was going to get in the way of this kind of intimate tone that we hoped to create. But also trying to commission at that time, not really knowing where the reader was going to be by the time we came out in September or October, and whether they would want to be reading still about the confinement, or whether they would actually want to be completely free from all those concerns. So that was actually a very difficult path to take, and it kept changing. So there was a lot of kind of hand-wringing on my part. But it did mean that we did a lot of R&D amongst the team, to sound very corporate, but just trying to figure out where we are after 10 years that perhaps we wouldn't have done had we been very distracted as usual by all the other bits and pieces you have to do in the course of a season. So I think we did a lot of thinking, and though we're now back to the beginning and we're making another issue, I think we've figured out how you would do it in these circumstances, and we've done a lot of the kind of philosophical work too.
And Penny, how did it change? Because of course, The Gentlewoman, in a way, it's kind of expanding. You have events, you have a lovely newsletter that I receive my inbox time to time. How did that change? I think especially the events, because there must be quite a struggle, because some of them couldn't happen, right?
Yeah, well, none of them can happen. We were ready to do something with churches, I think, in March as we were closing down as a country. So no, those things haven't happened. So yeah, as you say, we felt there was a necessity to increase the pace of the newsletter, which is now every second week. And of course, at the moment, we're thinking about other ways to engage with our membership, which there'll be more news on this season. But those indeed are the sorts of things that we've been thinking about. We've done one or two more sort of projects with other companies that have given us a chance to sort of expand what we would be on social media, which previously was treated very much like a news a notice board, sort of like a kind of Women's Institute notice board, where all the women that have been involved with us, past and present, we keep up with their news. So that was quite a sort of static and specific communication, and we've been looking at ways that we're going to widen that up. I want to think about how we would change what we do with the membership, all those sorts of things. So truly, those are things that I've been on the back burner for ages, and they're the sort of things I'd usually be saying, we must get round to. And in fact, because there's such an intense working day now with very little interruption, isn't there, when you're working by Zoom all the time, it's so transactional and you're not out kind of bothering people at their desks or making time to go for coffees and things like that. So you're just getting so much done that actually we are getting round to a lot of things that, yeah, we haven't been our first priority for a while.
Well, before we talk about some of the stories in the issue, I mean, I have to say, when you look at advertising, which it hits many magazines, you know, just, you know, flicking through the magazine, I said, you know, they are all still there. Do you think that shows just a sign of confidence in the brand, and perhaps because you've been there for 10 years and you created this kind of relationship with them? Because, it, you know, it's been a struggle for many print titles. I mean, not only print titles, but online as well. But I think I don't know, just looking at it, it seems
well,
that
our magazine is slimmer than it was last time. There's a good chunk of pages out of there which reflects the dip in advertising that everybody is experiencing. But yeah, our advertising director, Lizzie Sims, who's now on maternity leave, big shout out to her. She worked a miracle this season. And yeah, I think it is credit to her, but also credit to the kinds of relationships that we've built up. But I don't think you can assume anybody's going to support you, because you can't assume that they've still got the budget. Lots of people that we love are going out of business, and other people are having to be very creative with the way that they're working. So I suppose that is what is reflected in us working with companies in different ways on making social media projects and things like that, that, you know, previously perhaps we wouldn't have worked with them in that way, and it'd been very church and state and it'd just been about editorial. Those days have gone, that you can't be completely thinking that you can just stick to print alone. But I think with a lot of, as I say, sort of development work, so you feel like what you're doing is still sincere and it's not just making, you know, countless advertorials, etc. That's my job, isn't it? To make sure that that all makes sense and that there's as much thought and love gone into those projects and that they make sense in the context of the whole kind of magazine's universe.
And Penny, talking about the issue, I kid you not, there's always a sense of anticipation about which color you're going to use on the cover. It's funny, I, of course, care about who you chose to be on the cover as well. But again, lovely color. And again, a bit controversial, because which color is it? Because I was thinking, is it kind of a tone of green or blue? I'm sorry if I got it wrong.
I mean, this started happening, I think, just in the final couple of days, somebody took a picture. I think we were testing the barcode or something like that. Like, hey, this doesn't photograph the same color that it is in real life. And then I always attend the Venice Film Festival. I was doing some work out there with Miu Miu, and they had an influencer there who had just, lucky her, bought a Chanel handbag, and it was in exactly the same color. And I heard the next day that she'd taken it back to the shop because it didn't photograph the same color in her social media, and clearly that's why she had this Chanel handbag. So I started to realize, wow, there's some strange property in this color. There must be some word for it, sort of ASMR alike type word. But yeah, it's a sort of very, very strong kingfisher teal. I think Veronica, our creative director, is calling it vibrant teal. But yeah, it's it's proven a talking point, as the colors often do. Sometimes we've got a kind of a pale gray or a kind of whitish tone, and it's all about the color photograph. But yeah, it's quite nice to be talking about the frame for once.
And you've mentioned as well that, you know, whatever it happens during lockdown, you needed your cover shot. I mean, so that happened with Janelle Monáe, which is a great artist, and I think she made it for a great cover as well. How was it, you know, to get her for the cover?
Yeah, there's always a sort of gravitational pull around the cover star, in that you've not really got the issue together until you know who it is on the cover, because you're programming all the other elements against that person in the way that you need contrast. I mean, fashion's just, is only about contrast, isn't it? So yeah, we worked hard to make that one happen in real life. And the photography, you know, at a time when lots of people were coming up with kind of snazzy ways to capture people via Zoom, etc. So that was a lot of work to make sure that happened. And then again, you know, the amount of access via, our writer was based in, I think, in Sydney at the time that he was speaking to Janelle. But yeah, no, it very much was her moment. She had lots of films out, and actually we've been trying to work with her for a long time. I wanted to catch her at a time when she was working in film, because I think it's a really interesting career that she's carving out there. She's obviously a formidable musician and everybody knows that, but I think the subtlety of some of the performances that she's turned in Moonlight, etc., and just the idea that she's making such good choices. She's a really interesting person, and certainly that's been confirmed by the response. People really love her, don't they? So it's been a big success of a cover, which I'm very relieved about.
And another highlight for me, I think the fashion is very, very strong, this issue. And one of my favorite photo shoots, in fact, which, I mean, is quite unusual. And I wish, actually, I hope a man's tied to this, a similar shoot. I hope they're not copying you. But I love this. It's called Situation, I believe, where there's a lot of women sitting in chairs. you know what? Because I am always, I always like say, oh, my God, how do I look actually sitting in the chair? I sit in this chair for most of the day. And, you know, you need to look good while you're doing this. So I thought it was very creative, that one.
Yeah, Yeah, no, I really like that. That's got some of my favourite, the black and white spread there, with the kind of abstractions, I think are brilliant. I really love those pictures. Yeah, no, well, we're lucky to have Tim and Hisato turn that one in right at the very end of production. It nearly didn't happen. So I'll let them know that you appreciated their extra efforts.
Oh, please do. And Penny, how's life with you? Because, you know, to make a magazine, you're usually based in London, but this time you're kind of in between Scotland and London, right?
Yeah, I've spent very little time in England at all since March. I've mainly been in Fife in the East Nuke, where I've got place. Well, you know, I don't want to be glib. It's, you know, horrendous circumstances for lots of people, but it's given me a huge amount of mental clarity, I must say. And I feel really buoyed up. I've got loads of projects on and I've done a lot of work. Just got to be careful not to sort of overwork in these circumstances, haven't you? Because you don't stop. There's nothing to interrupt you. I feel very, optimistic in dreadful circumstances.
That was Penny Martin from The Gentlewoman. Issue 22 of the magazine is out now. And now we head to South Africa for an exciting story. The Daily Maverick, founded by Branko Birkic, is a fiercely independent South African online daily. Since last month, the title is also available in print. It is called Daily Maverick 168, made in their newsrooms in both Johannesburg and Cape Town. Here is Branko telling me all about their move to print and his fascinating story that started as a publisher of sci-fi books in Yugoslavia.
Well, I was a book publisher in Yugoslavia, and that was started in 1984, and stopped publishing science fiction books. And by 1991, it was the biggest privately owned publishing house in Yugoslavia. And, you know, in 1989, 1990, 1991 were horrible years for Yugoslavia. And eventually I was drafted in a civil war and decided that that was it for me. I saw the country change around me and change into a country which was basically talking about war and madness and hatred rather than talking about living together. And that was not the place in which I could remain. So I refused to go to war against my brothers, my Croatian brothers. And basically, my only choice was to leave the country. And so I left the country and I ended up in South Africa for several reasons. One of them, somebody told me that after Mandela was released, that the country is opening up and it will be an interesting place to be in. And also, to be honest, I could get a visa. Because, you know, when you're running out of the country, which is in the middle of the civil war, you don't have much choice. You know, beggar can't really be a chooser. So, ended in South Africa, and I learned to love this country a lot over the years. And this is my home over the last 30 years.
Well, and that's really beautiful to hear. I mean, it's so much of your home that, you know, you decided, you know, to launch this platform, the Daily Maverick, which I know exists since 2009. So tell us about the Daily Maverick. How does it fit into the South African press for those who perhaps don't know much about it? Are you guys political? Do you have a political side or you're very much kind of independent? I'm just curious, as I don't know much about kind of the press in South Africa.
Yeah, we are fully independent. So before Daily Maverick, there was a magazine called Maverick. And Maverick and Empire were my previous expressions of my published ethos. And they ran from 2005 and 2008. And then in 2008, the crisis came and we would not, we just didn't have enough cash to survive the crisis. And we went under. So Daily Maverick was basically born on the ashes of Maverick magazine. And to be honest, you know, I started Daily Maverick in 2005 and it was supposed to be a sort of high-end business magazine that had quite a few touches of Vanity Fair and, please don't laugh, Top Gear magazine. I'm a big fan of what Jeremy Clarkson did for publishing and for media. And it worked well for a while. It was a great magazine, and you would be surprised to hear how many people still have full sets of Maverick magazines all these years later, except we couldn't make it work commercially. you know, we became a bit of a cult magazine, but we didn't become commercially successful. So they all end up pear-shaped. Towards the end of that 3 years existence of Maverick magazine, it became much more of a political magazine rather than a business magazine. And you know, on the other hand, in South Africa, everything is politics. So it's very difficult to even talk about just about anything without entering the realm of politics within a few minutes. You know, so when Daily Maverick was created, the idea was to bring quality journalism online, you know, which was very much a novelty in those days, especially. And again, the idea was to you know, maybe do something which was slightly deeper than Huffington Post, but the idea was to, you know, to try to cover the country and what's going on in the country, especially in the political scene, to the best of our ability. Over the time, we kind of became more of a slate-like publication. And then again, after a couple of more years, we became, we added investigative capability to our publication. We added a couple of more sections. So today we are basically a national online publication with around 4 million readers every month. And, you know, we pride ourselves in calling ourselves the premium publication. And, you know, we are basically the only independent of those big publications. And we don't belong to any big media house. We don't belong to the government. And we are proud of it, and we maintain our independence quite jealously, and we intend to continue doing so.
And Bronco, which city are you based again?
Look, we are based wherever we have internet connection. we are based in Cape Town in Johannesburg, so we got two offices. We got around 80 employees right now. We publish every day anything between 40 and 50 features. We don't do kind of short news journalism. We do basically the first draft of history type of journalism. So our stories in principle are the definitive drafts of what's important today, what does it mean, and what does it mean in the future. And we have a large group of network contributors as well all over the world. So we have outside of our 80 employees, we got around 200 contributors all over the world who contribute regularly to us. And we became quite big in the meantime.
And Branko, tell us about this move to print as well, which is quite interesting. You started as an online newspaper, but then it's interesting that you found kind of a space and perhaps the need as well to have a week print content as well. Explain to us, how does it work? Is it kind of a weekly thing? And then there's a different name as well. Is it called Daily Maverick 168?
Yes, it's called Daily Maverick 168. A lot of people ask me why 168. It's very simple. It's that's the number of hours in the week. You know, it's 21st century. We live by the hour, not by the day or by the week. there's also another reason is, you know, when you launch your publications, as always, the important thing is to stand out. You know, so when you launch a weekly or weekend publications, so you either have weekly something else, or you got Saturday something, or you got Sunday something. You know, what we have is 168, so you automatically stand out, you know. And by people asking why 168, they remember it, they don't forget it, and then you know they see it in a crowd, you know, of newspapers. So it's just our way to attract attention as well, and also, you know, we also want to be clear that we stand out and that we are not like the others. You asked me about why. Look. Every environment, every media environment in the world has its own peculiar challenges, you know, and in South Africa, you know, challenges are massive. South African market is extremely small. South Africa is an extremely poor country. The media market has been for a long, long, long time controlled by four big private corporations and the South African Broadcasting Corporation. And it was not a market which was essentially developing or innovating, you know. And so what happened as a result of it, the print quality suffered, you know. So over the years, apart from the fact that the internet was gobbling up everything and that Google and Facebook gobbled up all the advertising money on internet and it was not replaced in paper, apart from that fact that you know, the readership was dropping in print, you know, and apart from the fact that, I mean, daily newspapers, you know, the print is really not a good medium for distributing information these days, unfortunately, on a daily basis, because it's just too slow. You know, apart from that, South Africa had this really major problem of the ever decreasing quality of coverage, especially in print. So, you know, we believe that on one side you got this decline, which is, as I said, you know, it's just unfortunately defined by the fact that in you know the electronic publications are faster and quite often cheaper. But on the other hand, we believe that the issue is also quality. So we believe that if we introduce the quality into print in South Africa, and the only print that we really feel is realistic would be a weekly print, that we can arrest the decline and we can actually quite comfortably have a commercially successful quality publication coming out every Saturday morning. You know, and you know, we are blessed with a problem that many other publishers would love to be blessed with. I hope that we produce so much content on a continuous basis that our biggest problem is what to leave out of our print publication rather than how to fill the empty pages.
That was Branko Birkić from the Daily Maverick. For more information, go to their website, dailymaverick.co.za. Finally on the show, we preview Monocle's November issue. I invite Monocle's Louis Harnett O'Mara to talk about his fabulous expo, based on our weekly segment on the weekend newsletter that we send to our subscribers every week. It's called Outpost News, where we speak with editors from local papers from Svalbard to Oregon. Here is Louis with more.
So, yeah, what we've got here is three stories, and I've edited each of them, and I've sent out reporters to different corners of the world. So what Outpost News is it's a look at newsrooms that are in the kind of further reaches of the earth. So that might be deep in the Amazon jungle, or that might be, I don't know, in the Arctic or in a desert in Australia. So in each of these places, we found people producing the news and reporting on their communities. And so this is just a compilation of three that we thought were amazing and we sent our reporters out to. And then a little snapshot of a few of the different ones we've looked at over the years. So just to tell you about the first one, I suppose, this is about one in the, almost in the Midwest. Like it's a very kind of cowboy rancher sort of town in America and very, very sparsely populated. But there is a tiny newsroom in an area there called Vail. And it's the newsroom is for the Mahler Enterprise. So this is run by Les Zaitz. He's a Pulitzer Prize nominated journalist. He was nominated twice and his work is kind of very hard hitting, super like investigative. And he looks really deep into different cases and different kind of local communities and how they kind of fit things together, whether there's problems in their judicial systems or various scandals that might have gone on. So what we did is we just spoke to him about his newspaper and how he supports his community and how he's trying to convince these very kind of conservative, rural, white Americans of a slightly better way of news than Fox News or something along those lines, something that is a little bit more hard-hitting and a little bit more journalistic rigor than what they're used to.
And Louis, one of my favorite things about the Outpost and about this story as well is that we kind of get out of our bubble here as well, because sometimes it feels the mainstream newspapers or even broadcasters, everyone is talking about Trump, everyone is talking about COVID, but it's fascinating to look at, you know, what's happening actually in those small towns. I mean, I'm sure people are concerned with sometimes very local problems, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So Zaitz was very famous in his town for his expose of the county's financial malfeasance, which is, you know, he kind of pulled up all these records that demonstrated that the county wasn't serving its citizens properly. And this is something that they need to be held to account for. It's something really important to these much smaller communities. And actually, these are kind of the bonds that hold these communities together. But just to look at the next story, which is an Outpost News on Svalbard. Now, there's a newspaper there called the Svalbard Posten, and it's run by Norwegians. Svalbard is technically it's technically owned by Norway, but any one of 42 nations, any citizen of 42 nations can live and work there visa-free. It's a little bit of an international no man's land. And where you'll find it is just up in the Arctic Circle, So it's an archipelago. There's more polar bears there than people. People being killed by polar bears is actually quite common. It's one of the world's kind of
A big story itself, right?
Yeah, it's a big story, and it made headlines not too long ago. So this is stuff that they've been reporting on. And so they're reporting on the news there. There's only, I don't know, about 6,000 people who live on this island. But there's lots of really, really amazing news coming out of it. There's, you know, there's oil drilling going on by Russian bases that are stationed there. And as I say, the polar bears are regular headline makers. The global warming and the effects of it are being felt more keenly there than anywhere else. So the editor, Hilda Rosvik, she's been reporting on these issues for these communities. And she says, actually, she used to work in Norway and she's never been particularly had a good line with politicians there. People don't necessarily want to comment. Now she's working for the Svalbard Posten. She has a direct line to some of the most important politicians in Norway and around the world, because the things that she reports on, though they're small town and though they're very minor news pieces in terms of them being community news, have huge significance for the kind of international makeup of this region. It's the only station there.
And what's the final one?
So this one here is Stewart Island News. Now, this is a bit more of a community newsletter. It's not the same sort of hard-hitting stuff you get with the others, but it is a bit of fun. And the journalist who runs it, Jess Caney, she travelled to Stewart Island from New York. And so Stewart Island, just to give our listeners some context, is an island just off the southern tip of New Zealand. And it's where you'll see kiwi birds. It's got the highest density of kiwi birds, which are, you know, almost extinct now.
I want to go there now.
Yeah. It's meant to be brilliant. And you'll see sea lions kind of lounging on the shores. There's meant to be this fantastic wildlife. But we sent our reporter there to speak to Jess Caney, and she saw a few of these kind of incredible things lying around on their beaches and hopping around in their trees. So there's only about 400 people who live on the island, kind of oddbods, people who have just run away from society a little bit. And the only way you can really get there is either via a plane, which carries a maximum of 6 people. So these are incredibly small planes, and that's not counting luggage. So you need to bear that in mind. But and it kind of lands down onto this tiny little track that's more of just a little mud track than it is a landing strip. And otherwise you can get there by a ferry, which is across the very choppy waters of the Favo Strait. So you get a sense of how far away it is from the rest of society. And it really is just this tiny, tiny community that's being supported by this newsletter. It circulates among, I don't know, probably about 200 people. A few people on the mainland also read it, just for the sheer oddity of it. And they've been publishing that for almost, I think, 50 years now. And there are iterations of this newsletter which have existed for almost 100 years, I think they said.
That was Louis Harnett O'Mara, and Monocle's November issue is out now. That's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editor, Nora Hall. And if you have any comments or queries, feel free to write to me, Fernando, at fp@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at the same time. And remember, please subscribe to The Stack on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and SoundCloud as well. And you can listen to the show again on monocle.com. Before we go, a little song for you, the South African hit that is conquering the charts worldwide. Master KG featuring Nocebo e Code, Jerusalem. You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Until next time, it's goodbye from me. Jerusalem, ikayalami, ilondoloze, uhambe nami, zungangishilana, Jerusalem.